Chapter 8. Aspen. Not surprisingly, the gate was rusted shut. From the looks of it, no one had even tried to enter in months, possibly not since shortly after Aspen had snuck out in the dark of the night, leaving behind a sleeping lark, his animal companions, and the two remaining servants, as he headed to his assignation with the servants of humanity's greatest enemy. After that fateful excursion, he had been taken to the castle and not allowed to return, for your own protection. Instead, Kor Sumi and a very young Silas serving as messenger had conspired with the head librarian to sneak out the few things they would need on their exodus. Aspen had been smuggled out of the castle using ropes and nets made from Sumi's thread and stuffed rather unceremoniously into a large pack on Kor's back, all so that no assassins could follow. He had not been allowed to return to this house, though he hadn't tried very hard, knowing as he did that there would be no tousled and distracted girl to call him daddy and welcome him home with a hug. Now he found that the gloomy atmosphere suited his emotions very well, and when the first drops of rain fell, curling lazily down the back of his neck and dripping from the brim of his hat, he turned his face up so that the drops could wash over his cheeks and jaw, hiding any moisture that might have already been there. Of course, those drops also ran down his neck and disturbed the warm, fuzzy little bundle that was resting there. Silas' voice was disgruntled. "Why is it raining?" Aspen almost managed to chuckle. Philosophers and mages have argued about that for years. Some say they're drops from the chaos pool, overflowing and bringing the memories of the dead to those left behind. Others insist it's simply a combination of tiny droplets of water suspended in the air, and temperature changes high in the. Silas bit him. He clapped a hand to his neck, almost surprised to find that she hadn't broken the skin. She was stronger than she used to be. "You know what I mean." The bat was indignant. This time he did laugh, but he also began to walk, trailing his hand along the wall, touching the stones beneath the ivy. "Perhaps you wondered why we were still outside for it to rain on us?" The small animal shivered, fluffing up against the ever-increasing moisture. "Don't be a beezy." Aspen frowned. "A what?" His fingers found a single stone, which he knew would look exactly like the surrounding stones, but which felt distinctly smoother to his questing fingertips. "A beezy. It's what Lyric calls someone mean. He said Lady Calliope looked like a total beezy." He could feel her beginning to clean her fur, in a futile attempt to stay ahead of the downpour that soaked them both. He choked on a snort of startled laughter, and found himself coughing as he leaned into the rough stone. When it gave way, revealing that a small part of the rock wall was actually a facade over a well-oiled metal hatch, he almost fell through. The hatch swung shut behind him, and he heard the click that meant the magical lock had engaged, and the passage would be as impenetrable as the surrounding wall for the next 3 hours. The rain stopped suddenly, and he looked up, finding himself beneath the branches of a familiar tree. This one was chosen by a doting gardener for a little girl who liked to take books into the garden to read, but would then burn as red as a tomato thanks to her fair skin. The gardener had had to trade his own time to a friend whose mistress had wanted her entire garden replanted for a summer soiree, and had only told her staff a week before the party was planned. In exchange for a day of backbreaking labor, the man had accepted this tree, which would never grow higher than 7 feet tall, but had dense drooping branches that spread nearly 10 feet wide and created a natural shelter. Birdie had loved it, and would sit in the lowest branches and read and sing like the bird after which she was named. When she began to stay out late, healing the injured and sick, Aspen had sent guards, both living and undead, after her, until she furiously told him to stop because he was frightening her patients. One would think that being the daughter of the most feared man in the kingdom would be sufficient to keep anyone away, but her gentle manner and kind heart, though it disguised a will of steel, drew in both lovelorn suitors and those who thought kidnapping the daughter of the wealthiest man in the kingdom was a good idea, no matter who he was when he was at work. Birdie was nearly taken right outside his gate as she was trying to get through the heavy metal monstrosity, and only her years of training in self-defense had saved her. It was then that he had the secret passage put in, so she could slip quickly and silently in and out, with the lock ensuring that anyone attempting to follow her would fail. Aspen drew in a breath, struggling to pull it into a chest frozen in sorrow. Silas, too, sounded subdued when she spoke. "Are you sure we shouldn't go back to the inn? Rouge said she'd come and check this place out later, and she won't find herself lost in memory?" he asked quietly, pushing aside the branches of the tree. Where his fingers touched, fresh green leaf buds sprouted from twigs and branches, and fuzzy white flowers grew up amidst the silvery green leaflets. He stroked one, smiling as he remembered how Lark had loved to cut the longest branches and bring them in every spring, creating bouquets of sticks and wildflowers. "Won't be sad," his little friend said, rubbing her small wet head against his jaw in the only consolation she could offer. Aspen's hand dropped from the downy petals of the flower to the bat's soft ears and rubbed gently. "I need to look around before our young thief takes everything she can fit into her seemingly infinite storage. If someone had been living here, or the place was ransacked, I would leave her to it but this." He looked at the house, rising dark and looming in the sky, occasionally backlit by flashes of lightning as the storm grew closer. "It's like she just left. Like she went to work, and she'll be back soon complaining that her patients never come as soon as they should, and that the acolytes the temple sends are never well enough trained." He pushed through overgrown grass which nearly concealed the once tidy path. His mouth quirked. "Well, maybe not quite like that. Tomas never would have let this grass grow so high. He was always worried the young mistress would get grass stains on her skirts, not that she ever cared." Silas giggled silently. Lark used to say she had to be very careful not to get stains on her clothes, or Tomas would be out here with the hand scythe, cutting every blade of grass individually. She worried he'd hurt his knees more than they already were. She had Plum make him a special tonic every night and make him drink it so he could walk the next day. Shaking his head, Aspen made his cautious way to the front door. "I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised. The man was almost as stubborn as she was." He sighed, pushing gently at the door. "I hope he was able to find a good position elsewhere, though I left enough money for him and Plum that they should never have to work." The door creaked open, and the floor fell out from under his feet. Literally. When Aspen blinked his eyes open, he found himself staring into concerned golden orbs. The pinpricks in his cheeks resolved themselves into Silas, using her wing thumbs to pinch him awake. When the bat saw his eyes open, she squeaked excitedly and held up her wing. "Aspen! Aspen! How many wings am I holding up?" He groaned, sitting up slowly and clutching at his head when the world spun dizzyingly. He tried to focus, but was only able to make out a vaguely Silas-shaped blob now residing on his chest. "One," he answered groggily, "you only have two and you're using one to hold on." Quickly, Silas climbed to his shoulder, peering up into his eyes again. "That's math, not vision. Though I guess if you can do math, you're probably okay. Are you okay?" Her voice was worried, and her big eyes blinked in the dimness. Aspen gingerly felt the large painful bump blooming on his skull. He activated his life sense, which was on nearly all the time now, but seemed to have turned off when he passed out. The first thing he did was check Silas, who seemed to be entirely unhurt, thank Gina. Then he looked inside himself and saw that his brain was beginning to swell slightly, which no doubt explained the loud pounding that accompanied every beat of his heart. Otherwise, he was surprisingly uninjured. Carefully, he applied a gentle flow of healing magic to his incipient concussion, feeling the headache fade as the swelling went down. "I'll be fine in a minute. What happened?" Silas sounded aggrieved. "You set off a trap. Someone dug a pit trap in front of the door, and we fell in it. That's a really rude thing to do to someone in their own home." Aspen snorted, then winced at the fading echo of his headache. "True enough, little one. We'll have to talk to the perpetrator about their manners. First, though," he struggled to his feet, slipping in the deepening muddy water as he stared up at the dim gap far above. Raindrops fell down, gathering in his eyebrows and trailing down his cheeks, and he realized his hat was missing. Bending, he started fishing around in the mud, finishing his thought with a sigh as he pulled the dripping thing from the muck. "We need to get out of here." Silas poked her head out from under his chin, eyeing the hat dubiously. "You aren't going to wear that, are you?" He laughed, tempted for a moment to slap the soggy, misshapen, and now smelling of eau de boggy pit hat on his head just to see how she would react. Instead, he rolled it up and tucked it into his belt. "No, my friend. Even I know when to start looking for a new hat." Silas poked her head out further, looking up into his eyes. "No, you don't." He almost choked on a raindrop. "Ah, I guess that's true. It was the first hat I managed to make by myself, though." The bat's serious little voice stabbed him to the heart. "Cor said he wouldn't eat that thing if you made a fruit salad and used it as a bowl. Then before he could respond, she dropped from his shoulder, flapped her wings a few times, and flew up into the darkness above. "That rotten ruminant," Aspen muttered, touching a broken root that extended into the deep pit. Beneath his hand it twitched, then grew, extending fibrous tendrils into the earth surrounding it, firming the dirt and creating a solid handhold. Carefully, he reached up, grabbing another root and repeating the performance. Cautiously, mentally cursing his erstwhile companion even as mud, rocks, and rain threatened to smother him, he climbed the side of the sheer shaft. After some interminable period, he reached up, nearly blind in the now torrential rain, and clutched at the edge of the opening. Forcing himself higher on his last foothold, he thrust his arm and the top half of his chest out, scrabbling at the muck and pulling a handful of grass nearly free of the earth, roots and all. Once he was stable, he paused, half in and half out, swiping at his drenched face with his equally drenched and filthy sleeve. "Well," said a familiar voice in an unfamiliarly sarcastic tone, "that took long enough. I would have helped, but of course, you don't need help, right?" He looked up, swinging a leg out of the hole, and sighed as he finally rolled out, flopping onto his back in the muck. "Hello, Rouge, and a lovely evening to you too. I see you found Silas."